Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Everybody was cranky last week because we didn't get a chance to chat with Tim Lacombe, but he's here now, so everybody calm down. We're going to be all right. Tim's back. Coach, how are you?
Hey, Coach.
Yeah, I'm sure there was just an absolute, amount of displeasure that I wasn't around. I'm sure it was something that was certainly missed, but God, it's great to be back.
I had to log off Twitter for like a week. The negative reaction was
just
real.
People were, more Lacombe.
More
we
Tim.
We don't hear enough of this guy.
Hey, the ratings company was happy because they could count the number of listeners on one hand. So
here we go. That's not true.
That is true. Hey, what can we do collectively to stop the juggernaut that is now Gonzaga? They just signed the number one senior and potential number one pick in the 2022 NBA draft. His name's Chet Holmgren.
Chet Holmgren, who sounds like an insurance salesman in Lincoln, Nebraska, but but he is your newest prize recruit of the Gonzaga Bulldogs.
Pleasure to meet you, Chet Holmgren. I can hand you any kind of life or any sort of property.
Chet? Chet Niedermeyer? Is that you?
This is me. This is Chet Holmgren. Yes. State Farm, baby.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I think you do what I did, and that's to take a large step to out of the way and let them kind of do their thing and maybe even buy a Gonzaga T-shirt because if you can't beat them, join them. And I'll tell you what, they're doing an amazing job at continuing to, push the envelope and change the game for them.
And they haven't done a lot. They haven't really jumped into the one-and-done waters before, but Suggs last year and now this Holmgren kid, seems like they're transitioning into that too.
Yeah, I mean, they had one kind of by accident with Collins.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody, from his college year, I don't know that anybody until the very end, he really did kind of make a one-and-done career out of himself in the NCAA tournament, which happens. They got Suggs. And I know that Suggs and Holmgren were pretty tight. And so I'm not surprised at all. That's the way that I totally expected that decision to go for the last couple of weeks. I thought the only thing that maybe could throw a wrench in it was Tommy Lloyd and his influence. But obviously Chet's, he was committed to Gonzaga, so he stayed with it.
With that said, sounds like Arizona got a good one there.
Oh, man, he's a great one. He's one of the smarter guys I've ever met. I think he has a great understanding of organization and how that should run. I know he's doing a whole lot of things behind the scenes to make the Zags great, for the last 20-plus years. So people have been trying to pry him away for a long time, and Arizona got a really good one.
Coach, what do you know outside of everything about Dwayne Wade's career? What do you know about Dwayne Wade, and what did you think about the addition of him as a part owner?
I don't know a whole lot personally about Dwayne. I've obviously followed him in his career, and I think he's actually a perfect guy to come here and really help to change the narrative and to change the perception and to change minds. I think that needs to take place too here in Utah still, to get people to really accept all sorts of different things. But I think in terms of the organization and what he can do for it and the players, man, I think you're going to see some great things because his reputation is such that he really is kind of the one guy that could come in and transcend and do this. And I think it's brilliant on everybody's part. I'm excited he's going to be involved and have a seat at the table and be able to kind of influence the direction of the franchise for a long time.
Tim Lacombe joining us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. I don't mean this disrespectful when I say this, but what were your thoughts on the Jazz B-League team, not G-League team, but their JV team essentially yesterday and up against the Lakers and frankly having some opportunities there in the fourth quarter to win that before losing in overtime?
Yeah, it's crazy. I really did think that for having a bunch of guys that had not seen the floor a lot together, that things went really well. I think they played exactly the way they needed to against the Lakers' defense. They got them moving. They were able to drive, and they had 31 assists. So I think there were a lot of really positive things. The unfortunate part is they did end up losing the game, and I thought there were, you know, a couple pivotal times. Obviously, the two-minute report came out, and that does nothing but make you mad. Because in my estimation, they would have, if Quinn would have challenged that charge, that block charge call on Ilyasova, it goes back to Sekakis. I don't know that they've got the guts right there to overturn that call. And so, to me, that report is just futile because at that point in time, you know, what's done is done. So I did see where Schroeder all night long really was driving it, and he would swat the defender who was going straight up. He'd swat him out of the way so he'd get his shot up. He did it three or four times, but that was one of the plays they mentioned late as well. So that stuff's nothing but aggravating. What it really comes down to is the Jazz were on an awesome play. First of all, they had a ton of resilience to stay in the game when they got down big. Made a great run, kind of spurred by Ingles, you know, running the show. But they run an awesome set out of a timeout to get a three and a two-point lead, and then just have kind of a breakdown defensively. And that's the one as a coach. All the other stuff you can't really do anything about. But how do we get better in a situation like that where we got to get one stop? And, you know, whether it's your mainline guys or the reserves, it's still the Jazz, and those games count. So I'm not a big moral victory guy, and to me, that was more frustration than anything. They got all the way back there, and they just couldn't finish it.
I know as a coach, you've probably seen hundreds of sprained ankles over the years. How did you manage that as a coach? How do you manage your expectations of the return? And when you think about Donovan Mitchell's sprained ankle, how much fear do you have in regards to him being able to come back this year and be the Donovan he was before he went out?
You know, when I saw it, obviously really concerned. And then, you know, once they did the tests and all that sort of stuff, you know, the MRI, I think everything that came out of that was really good news. And the fact that it's not a high ankle sprain, I know that's something, you know, LeBron's been battling for a lot of this year. And those can be really, really tricky because, you know, a guy can feel somewhat like he's ready to go, but then you get out there at full speed and you're not able to go. So I think the long answer to your question, Hans, is I think we put that in our medical guys' hands always, right? We wouldn't ever kind of set any kind of expectation on time. It was really more the doctors and how the player felt. But you're 100% right. I mean, it was crazy how many sprained ankles you see in a season. And the Jazz, honestly, I'm knocking on my wood desk here, but the Jazz have really, for the most part, done a good job of avoiding injury. I thought they've played things pretty well. And a lot of those blowout games, you know, you take that into account. A lot of the blowout games, you know, the Jazz were able to sit their guys maybe more than others. So it all kind of comes back around. But I don't really anticipate this being a huge issue for Donovan. I hope that, you know, it goes kind of like standard sprained ankles go, and there's that healing period and rehab period and prehab period, and then you get back in and start to test it. And how long that takes, we'll just have to see.
That's the thing that it's – and not just – I mean, obviously Donovan's injury is something that is kind of outside of this next question, but – you kind of have to walk this line. There's 15 games left in the season. You want to hold on to the one seed, at least bare minimum the two seed, but you also want to make sure your guys are playing their best basketball, and it's a grind. I mean, this 72-game season crammed into, you know, a short amount of time, and the amount of 4 games and 6 days and all that, those other kind of stretches this team has dealt with, it's got to be weird as a coaching staff to try to figure out, okay, we need to give these guys maybe a couple nights off along the way, but yet we also need to maintain where we're at going into the playoffs. And I don't know how you judge that.
Yeah, I've never been great at that. You know, to me, this is where the chess game becomes really interesting. I looked at, you know, if you just look at the schedules that are left for the teams that really kind of have a chance of the overall one seed, you know, I'm looking at the overall one seed in the league. I mean, they've come this far. That's what, you know, they got to try to tie up this thing through the playoffs. you look at it, and you know, Phoenix has got a pretty rough road. They've got 8 games against the West, 8 against the East. But of their 16 games, they only play 4 teams that are sub-500. So they've got a really rough road, and these first 5 could really, you know, make the difference. They play Milwaukee tonight on the road. These are all on the road: Milwaukee, Philly, Boston, Brooklyn, New York, Knicks. So that is a gauntlet right there. And, you know, Boston's been playing better as of late. So there's 5 games that Phoenix is going to face. You know, the Jazz, they're 15 games left. They've got 10 games against sub-500 opponents. Only 1 game left with the team in the East, and the rest is all kind of sub-500, a lot of those sub-500 playoff teams in the West. So Philly's the other interesting one. They've got 16 games left, 6 against the West, 10 against the East. They've got 9 sub-500 games. So pretty interesting to sit back and watch how this all goes down. But in terms of strategy, I really think the only thing you can do is pay attention to yourselves. I think that's what the Jazz are always great at. I know they rest guys when they need to or they feel like, you know, it makes sense. But for the most part, they're going to play their guys. And I will say this, if Rudy Gobert is able to play and on the floor, the Jazz will, I think for the rest, you know, the majority of the rest of these games, they're going to be in a good place.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit more specifically with tonight's matchup. Let's just project that Rudy Gobert and Mike Conley are back on the court for the Utah Jazz and taking on Andre Drummond and Caldwell Pope and Adair Rest and of course, Kuzma and this Lakers crew in L.A. How do you – let's project that those two are back on the court. How do you see this going tonight?
Well, a couple things that I'll point out or call out from the game on Saturday afternoon. The Lakers got to the rim. They attempted 40% of their shots at the rim. The Jazz give up about just under 30% at the rim during, you know, when Rudy's in the game. So right there you can see, and you saw it with Drummond. I mean, he had rolls that he was able to get right to the basket. You know, it wasn't even as though, you know, Favors didn't play either. So they just really played on a big-time size advantage. Rudy just shores so many things up in the shots that aren't even taken, you know, in a game at the rim that that Saturday would have been, you know, taken in droves. So I think he changes that enormously. I really think if Rudy played Saturday, if he was able to play Saturday, I mean, the Jazz held the Lakers scoreless in the fourth quarter for over 6 minutes without a real powerful center in there. So the Lakers have some hiccups offensively, especially when, you know, LeBron and AD are not in the lineup. So I think it really is a game tonight that the Jazz go out, you know, play really hard. But I think Rudy, you know, if he plays, which sounds like he's going to play, that really pushes them over the hump in my mind.
Tim Lacombe joining us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. We missed you last week, so we didn't get a chance to chat with you on this. But your thoughts, and I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. I don't know if you're aware of him or aware of the reputation, but what do you think of the Ryan Odom hire at Utah State?
Well, I'm going to tell you something pretty interesting. I had the game Saturday, so I kind of was getting up to do a few Saturday chores, and my phone rang a little bit early for me on Saturday morning, and it was a number I didn't recognize. And I answered the phone, and it was Coach Odom. And he had somehow, you know, through the grapevine heard maybe I might know a thing or two. And he just wanted to introduce himself and you know, kind of talk about Utah and the culture and talk about. So we talked for 30, 45 minutes. And tell you what, they got a great one. I know from a distance watching him, he's been, you know, so good as a program builder. But I could just tell, you know, you can only tell when you know, when you have the opportunity one-on-one. And I was just really, really impressed with, you know, the fact that somehow, some way, you know, he wanted to ask me about a few things and reached out in a very, very awesome way, wants to, you know, connect and at some point have lunch or dinner. But I just thought it was really cool. I think that he's a, to me, he seems like a perfect leader of a team. I think he's got great understanding and knowledge, but at the same time, I think his ability to connect, you know, and the fact that he's, you know, out beating the streets, talking to idiots like myself, that says a lot. So I'm really excited about it. And, you know, as always, I've always loved the Aggies, even when I wasn't, you know, I've never coached there, but I've always got a fond spot because I've got so many friends and things. But I'm going to definitely follow them pretty closely and excited to see what they do.
Last thing for me, Coach. What is your take on a harmonica as a musical instrument?
You a Blues Traveler fan?
Oh, yeah. I saw Blues Traveler. So it was after he had a stomach staple surgery.
Yeah.
You know, he had some health issues, and so he had to have major surgery. And I walked in, and this skinny dude was up there whacking away on the harmonica, totally different one, you know, the John Popper I was used to watching. But I got to see him play in front of about 100 people in a random bar in Park City back in the 90s. And, no, it was 2000, I guess. It was when I was working for Jack, Ray Jack. But I got to see him, big Blues Traveler guy, loved the last scene of Kingpin. You know,
oh, yeah.
They play that. They make a little cameo. And but I'm a big harmonica guy. I mean, you can't play the blues without laying on that harmonica. Can you play the harmonica?
No. Yes. It's so funny because
I mean, what else is there to do in
Weezer?
What's that place you're from again?
It's Weezer.
Weiser.
But it's spelled
Weiser. What is there to do in Weiser if you don't play the harmonica or peel potatoes?
Weiser.
Potatoes are down in my neck of the woods. They were onions up there.
We're all onions.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We're stinky onions.
That makes sense. You're
Tim, I was trying to think of what I could bring to a jam session. I'm like, what could I bring? Like, what? And I'm like, they would laugh at me with a kazoo or a flutophone and probably, you know, laugh me right out with one of those recorders. I thought, what about a harmonica?
I got something for you, dude. I saw once I was in a bar in Austin watching a band play, and a dude walked out with kind of like this, it was, for lack of a better word, it's kind of like a steel vest.
Okay. Oh, I've seen those. Yeah. What? No, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah,
okay,
and
so like
there's some country music
on,
guys that do that.
He put on some gloves with like nails.
Yeah, it's like Cajun, like a lot of that's big in the South, like Cajun music.
Okay.
Right. Like Zydeco.
Yeah. Yep.
So is it like the Spoons,
so
but playing on a vest?
In the middle of this bar, he starts, you know, the band's playing and he's just percussing on this vest and sparks are flying. And I thought, at some point, I wanted put somebody in a vest on the stage with me. So I think that's, we found our deal. You can do that. You can keep beat on a vest.
Heck yeah, man. Big old Viking and a steel vest.
The issue is we got to find a vest big enough.
Broad-shouldered vest.
Yeah, like King Arthur times.
Hey, by the way, Taylor Swift just set a record. She's had 3 number one albums in just 259 days, breaking the record of the Beatles that set that for back 54 years ago.
Jeez.
You have a lot of respect for T-Swizzle?
Well, you have to if she's selling that many records. I don't listen to her, but that doesn't mean I won't at some point. I'm
really surprised.
Actually,
I thought, you know, with your daughter in the house.
I got into Sheryl Crow today, this morning, getting ready for work. You know, I always hit the – Sheryl Crow was the pick this morning, so
wow,
I can probably get to her at some point.
Sheryl Crow's, I think, hands too. We're both big friends of Sheryl Crow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's terrific. Her music is phenomenal.
Well, Coach, appreciate it. Of course, we always got to take you off the beaten path a little bit there at the end. Happens every time.
Well, and I do it to you as well. So, it's fine.
Weezer. It's a, you know, the ice.
And it's like Boise, too. No Z in there. Yeah, there's just, no Weezer.
Nope, just Weezer.
It's like the
Weezer
band?
Yeah, exactly. Just not spelled the same.
You know what the band should do? They should go in and pay them to change the name.
Change the name, yeah.
Same the spelling.
Hey, did you like that cover album they did?
Absolutely.
See, my only issue was it sounded like everybody went and played, you know, Africa, and it just sounded like Toto. Like it, I didn't get a lot of the Weezer spin on it, and maybe I'm just not listening close enough. But I couldn't.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell a big difference.
You got like some Cake covers, you know.
Yes, so now we're talking.
You're a Cake guy. Everyone
love
told me that.
Yeah, love. That was one of the better concerts I've been. I've seen Cake a couple times in concert. They're really good.
I'll leave you with this. Standing in the Alpha Beta parking lot, watching the sunset. You know that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He wants you to keep going.
I do, actually. Hey, Coach, you're the best. Appreciate it.
See you guys.
Tim Lacombe right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone, and The Zone Sports Network.
Love and respect for that man.
Yes, very much so.